When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Give your kitchen the upgrade it deserves with Clearview Cabinetry. Clearview Cabinetry starts as a kitchen built for now and grows with you as life changes. It's flexible by design with full access cabinet construction, so you can go from doors to drawers for storage that works when you need it. Get an appointment-free design consultation and explore all our cabinet options on display in our kitchen showroom and save big money now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Maryland sports fans, there's only one sports book in the great state of Maryland with over 50 years experience booking bets and supporting customers. Betfred Sportsbook at Longshots is now open and is the only sports book in Frederick offering cash betting on football, basketball, world soccer, and more. Visit the Betfred Sportsbook at I-270 and MD-85 in Frederick, right next to Longshots off-track betting. Go to BetfredSports.com for more information and your chance to win exclusive merchandise. Must be 21 or older. Play responsibly. For help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is the Decibel Unit Podcast with Chris Sinzak and Aaron Camaro.
It's the news you can use. That's right, Decibel Geek podcast style. I am your co-anchor today. My name is Aaron Camaro, and the man that's going to bring us all the news, all the happenings, the important stuff going on in this world, the co-anchor of the Decibel Geek podcast news, new noise, it's Chris Sinzak. What's going on, brother?
Well, I don't know if you've heard, but I'm kind of a big deal.
You're a real big deal. If it weren't for you, I'd have no idea what's going on in the world of rock and roll.
Well, and as a co-anchor, my walls are lined with rich mahogany.
Well, good, because we're going to need that today.
Yeah, we've got some funny stuff, some heavy stuff, some sad stuff to talk about this week, and I'm going to go on a rant about something, too.
Yeah, okay. All right. I always love it when you go on a rant. That's something to definitely look forward to. I ran into an old friend of ours at the McKay's this week, Buddy Baker. Buddy was awesome. He was the one that hooked us up at the Kiss concert that got us out of the nosebleeds and down into a box suite, and how sweet it was. But I ran into him. He's like, you know what I love about your show? You guys are just perfect together. Like, you're always upbeat and, you know, you're looking for the positive in things. And Chris, he's a curmudgeon.
I can't argue.
It made me laugh because it was true.
Yeah. He's right, but fuck you, buddy.
Love that guy.
Well, yeah, we're a good balance of good and evil, I think.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It works. It's worked for a long time. No sense in changing it now. I don't think we could if we wanted to.
Nah.
So I look forward to the curmudgeoning a little bit later on. But before we get to all the new noise and the happenings in the world of rock and roll, we got to take care of our business. And you know us, our number one thing, the thing that makes us the most happiest in the whole world, it's those sweet reviews and recommendations. We've got two of them here that are pretty stellar. The first one here is an Apple Podcast review. Comes to us from the Great White North up in Canada. And it's got all 5 stars. I thought they'd do maple leaves up there. But no, these are stars. We like all 5. It's entitled Lives Up to the Hype. And it goes a little something like this. I've heard about this podcast for years, but never checked it out until recently. It definitely lives up to the hype. I've been selecting the Kiss episodes. Not only are these guys knowledgeable, but they are creative and entertaining also. Thanks. And that comes from a true Kiss fan, Ron Williams, like I said, up in Canada. 5 stars on the Apple Podcasts.
Thank you so much, Ron. Appreciate it.
Heck yeah. You know what I was thinking?
Mm.
Kissmas in July this year should be pretty damn good. We got no excuses.
That's true. Got a lot of time on our hands.
Yep. So if you're a Kiss fan, you got to go back in the archives. We've done so many cool Kiss episodes and talked to so many cool people that have had a part and a hand in Kisstory. It blows my mind sometimes, the awesome people that we talk to. And we meet new people all the time. We're going to have a special guest this Friday on our Decibel Geek Friday Night Live stream that we do on the YouTube. You're going to want to join us for that, especially if you're a Kiss fan. We're going to have a cool special guest for that as well.
Yeah, that's Eric Carr related, and Eric Carr's car related. It's going to be really fun.
Right on. I'm looking forward to that. All right, I said we had one more, and I meant it. And this one's a long one, so strap in. It's a Podchaser review, and I know that because it's got pink stars. It also has five of them. I like that. This comes to us from Patrick 68802, and it goes like this. Chris and Aaron kill it with witty commentary and great chemistry. Chris is a wealth of music knowledge and info. When it comes to Kiss, there is a reason Sonny Pooney keeps running and won't take on Chris in a Kiss trivia showdown. Aaron, the voice, is a beast of different music styles. He comes from a wrestling background, and he's just an all-around great dude. His laugh is the feature sounder on Cobras and Fires podcast. You should get royalties for that, Aaron. I agree. Enough about the hosts. This podcast will introduce you to all types of music, not just hard rock or heavy metal, other bands like Local H and Marvelous 3. Keep an open mind. I have learned a lot from this podcast music-wise. Decibel Geek also does great interviews and does deep dives on bands. Decibel Geek is a must listen. My only complaint is we need more content from Decibel Geek. Thank you so much, Chris and Aaron. You guys rock. Decibel Geek fan out.
Wow, what a review.
What a review. That is stellar. I love it. All the stars, sweet. That's the kind of thing that when other people, there's other rockers out there in the world, fans of this kind of music that we cherish and love and pay tribute to every single time we do an episode. And there's people out there wandering around aimlessly. They don't have the podcast that they need. And how will they know about the Decibel Geek podcast? Well, they might be surfing around and find that review and go, that's the one. I saw it on Podchaser. Or they might see the one from Ron that came to us from Canada on the Apple Podcast reviews and go, yeah, that sounds good. Maybe this one does live up to the hype. And then all of a sudden, guess what? We got new friends coming in. They're joining in on the Decibel Geek community on the Facebook group and getting in on the conversation. They're liking the page. All that good stuff. And we love it because we build the community and we keep it going because we have the power to show those on the top that rock and roll is still valuable and still viable and still important in this modern age. You know, it's up to us all. And we band together as rockers and we wave that flag proudly and we show everybody what it's all about.
Yeah. And Sonny Pooney, quit ducking me. Let's do the trivia. Come on.
Yeah. No kidding, Sonny. Don't be afraid. He's such a... I think he should be afraid.
As long as we're not doing like chart positions and shit like that, which is what he's... That's what he usually does.
Yeah.
If it's real trivia, not like, you know, mathematical stuff, I'm good.
I can tell you, as the creator and host and question gatherer of Beat the Geek, the toughest part about putting together those questions is finding a Chris Sinzak worthy Kiss round question and then finding one for the opponent that's worthy as that, even though Chris's knowledge is so much higher than just about everybody else he's ever faced on the show, especially when it comes to Kiss.
It's a badge of honor, but it's also kind of pathetic.
Some people would say that dude is awesome. Other people would say, nerd.
Yeah, no argument there. But
those are awesome reviews. If you guys want to help us out, leave us a review. A couple of great places to do it. Like I told you last time, there's a new one called Podknife out there. We've got Podchaser, which is a really cool site that also you can go on and leave reviews of all your favorite podcasts. Help other people discover their new favorite podcast through your reviews. And of course, a sweet Facebook recommendation is probably the easiest way. You're on there anyway. leave us a quick recommendation on the Facebook. And if it's awesome, and if these reviews got all the stars, then we're definitely going to read it on the show. So, what did we do last week? It's been so long.
A couple weeks ago, we did Radio Sucks.
Oh, yeah?
Sorry, guys.
We kind of got our Decibel Geek timeline mixed up a little bit here, and it's mostly my fault. So, no, it's wholly my fault. So,
we did have the discussion before, and if you're a Patreon VIP, you can hear that about there is going to be more content coming down the pike. We're just trying to get our ducks in a row.
Yeah, and so we kind of tripped up here for a minute, but we're coming back strong. I think we're working on giving you guys more content than ever. So if you guys love Decibel Geek, you're going to have a whole lot more to love. If you want to become a Decibel Geek Patreon VIP, well, you're getting some cool extra stuff over there too. Recently, we recorded a video of ourselves recording an episode. So the VIPs got that. And we're still waiting for the verdict on it, if they liked it or not. If that's something you'd be interested in getting, become a Decibel Geek VIP by going on to patreon.com, looking up Decibel Geek, choosing your level of commitment, and letting us know what you want over there, and we'll start making that happen too.
Yep, for real.
So, it's been a minute. We've kind of flip-flopped around a few things, but today we're back with new noise. But we have a thing where when we release a new episode, the main post goes on Facebook, Decibel Geek Podcast. It also goes out on Twitter, into the Twitterverse. And people see that, and they can share it on Facebook. They can retweet it on Twitter. And what that does is it shares it with all your rock and roll friends. They come hang out with us again. The party grows a little bit more. And by doing that, we love you so much for helping us share and spread the word that we make you an honorary Geek of the Week.
Geeks of the Week this week are Adam Cox, Rockin' Ron Runyon, Sit and Spin with Joe, Jason Worden, William Douglas, Kristen Schimbeck, Matt Ashcraft, Pantheon Podcast, Kevin Williams, Mark Alden Taylor, Freeform Rock Podcast, Mark and Jerry BS Sessions, Shay Hargett, The Bakery Podcast, Aaron Baker, Matt Porter, The Kiss Room, Jeffrey Mendenhall, Simon Catt, Mike Parnell, Chuck Gee from 8-Ball, Shane Abair, David Glenn, 8-Ball, Doug Fox, Sean Cullen, Jay Shabluski, Hakon Bergstad, J.J. McElhenney, Kevin's on Fire, Eladio, Gregory Muse, Focus on Metal Podcast, Vet Halen, Keith Rockford, Chad Leisner, Ernesto Aguiar, Grayson Gallegos, David Cathy, Scott Crouch, and as always,
the Mooger Fooger. Yes, those are our people, our Geeks of the Week. They are so because they shared and retweeted. You can hear your name at the top of the show next week if you share this week's episode of New Noise. Yeah, simple, easy, fun.
So we ready to get into the news?
Lay it on me, man. What have I been missing out on?
Oh, man, well, we can't avoid the biggest story over the past week or so. Taylor Hawkins from the Foo Fighters passed away really, really young, 50 years old. This is going to be one of those that sticks with a lot of people for a long time. I can only imagine you were about as shocked as I was.
I mean, I guess. I don't know. You know, I'm a fan. You know, The Foo Fighters to me are one of those bands where they come out with an album and there's probably three songs on that album I really dig a lot and the rest of it I don't understand. So I could never call myself a hardcore Foo Fighters fan, but I definitely appreciate the drumming of Taylor Hawkins because of the Foo Fighters songs that I really like, he shines on those songs because those songs are a little bit heavier, a little more rocking because when the Foo Fighters want to rock hard, they got the ability to do it, you know, and Taylor Hawkins was always a huge part of that.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm in the same boat as you. I mean, there's some stuff I like. I wouldn't even really classify myself as a fan. I'm more of a fan of them as people. They seem like good guys and, they've been around for a long time and especially Taylor and Dave both have a healthy appreciation for classic rock and stuff that we like. Yeah. So, I always kind of related to them on that level. He had a great career even before Foo Fighters. He was Alanis Morissette's drummer, and he was also with Sash Jordan for a while before that. But no, it's just sad. I mean, the Columbia Attorney General said they found like 10 substances, including THC, antidepressants, and opioids in his system. So, and he did have drug struggles in the past. So,
sure.
You know, it sounds cliche, but it's another rock and roll casualty. Addiction is such a big part of this business, and it's also you know, it's hard to, well, it's a big part of life in general. People are addicted no matter what they do for a living. So,
right.
But that type of lifestyle, having to travel all over the world and be gone from your family a lot, I'm sure that led to moments of him slipping into this. And, it's just heartbreaking. And, yeah, it's sad. I feel mostly bad for his family and, you know, his friends and his bandmates. You know, it's just awful. I do wonder, you know, where this leaves the Foo Fighters, because the him and Dave were so close. I do wonder if that's the end of the road for them.
Man, I don't know. I gotta think Foo Fighters go on. I mean, it may never be the same. I mean, of course, Dave Grohl has got the notoriety. He could just start releasing albums as Dave Grohl and probably do just as well as a Foo Fighters album.
Probably. I mean, I'd say there's at least going to be quite a long break before they do anything else. Yeah.
That I could definitely agree on. You know, and Ted Nugent caught a lot of hell, but some of the stuff he was saying made a lot of sense. He told stories about his bass player in the Amboy Dukes about how at 15, he was just a virtuoso, you know, just a monster on the bass and was one of the most amazing players he'd ever heard. He says by the time he's in his early 20s, he's hooked up in heroin and he's dead, you know, and what could have been. And he talked about, you know, recording Weekend Warriors in like 78, and Bon Scott and AC/DC are recording Highway to Hell, and Bon Scott would come in with a bottle of Jack Daniels or some other kind of whiskey, just hammered, you know, and he said, just nice guy, you know, super nice guy. And he'd say, why are you doing this to yourself? You know, and talked about telling Jimi Hendrix, no, you know, I don't want to do drugs with you, man. This shit's going to kill you. And on all accounts, you know, he was right. And, you know, a lot of people will say, because he caught a lot of shit for saying that, you know, because what he was saying was, you know, here's a guy that, you know, openly did drugs, you know, and people knew about it and he didn't really hide it. And, you know, here he is at 50 and he's dead, you know, and that's in a lot of ways kind of selfish. And he talked about like the artistry in it, you know, and how, you know, a lot of times artists will have a song stuck in their head, you know, and it'll drive them crazy, you know, until they can get it out. And a lot of times doing drugs, they think will help that, you know, help them be able to get what's in their brain into reality, you know. And he says, you know, it was never for him because he was just around people. Probably that kid he was in Amboy Dukes with, you know, saw him doing heroin and it killed him in his 20s, you know, and it probably made him go, you know what, I ain't fucking around with none of that stuff, you know.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, I disagree with Ted on a lot of stuff, but I thought he was being unfairly bashed over what he said about Taylor. To me, it seemed like he was kind of paying tribute to him, but he was also highlighting of how fucking sad is this that somebody with that much talent and everything, you know, fell victim to this stuff. I don't think he was saying, you know, like the selfish part, maybe that one, that kind of rubbed me a little bit the wrong way. But at the same time, it's one of those things where it's just sad as fuck that somebody with that much talent, and that much going for them falls victim to this stuff. And I think he was coming from a genuine good place with what he said. But I also think at this point, no matter what Ted Nugent says, people are going to take pot shots at him. So that's Ted Nugent could say the sky's blue and people would start bitching that it's green.
Yeah, they said it was hate speech.
No.
I read it and was like, wow, I don't know. He's got a unique point of view for sure, because he's one of the few rock stars that never have partied. You know, that's why, you know, when he or Gene Simmons says something about doing drugs or alcohol, it's hard for, you know, most average people to really understand that, because most average people have not ever not touched drugs in their entire life or never have had a drink of alcohol in their entire life. So that's kind of a hard thing to relate to, you know?
Well, I mean, everybody's got their own perspective on stuff. So, I mean, I don't know. I read what Ted said and I was like, no, that, I mean, I can't really disagree with anything. And how unfeeling. I'm like, it sounded like he was pretty compassionate to me in what he said.
Yeah. And he said he loved the guy, so he must have known him.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not I'm not going to go on a crusade to defend Ted Nugent. That's a bad idea. But
yeah, that's not a good idea.
Just because there's plenty of other things I don't like with him. But no, I just, it's a sad situation. And, you know, the outpouring of love and tributes to him was nice to see. And but yeah, this fucking, the drug addiction stuff, man, I just wish it would go away. It's awful.
Yeah, I mean, that's, it's one of those things. I mean, 50, when you say it, you know, you're dead at 50. That's young. You know,
it's very young.
But if you think about it in terms of like doing opiates, that's kind of old. You know, you shouldn't be doing that death drugs at 50 years old, I don't think, you know.
That's a pretty, it's a dangerous game to play.
I mean, here's a funny story, you know, and this is something I'm not going to, you know, when we went to Florida, we seen all kinds of different people, met new friends, seen a bunch of old friends, and I'm not going to give no details to give nothing away. But at one point, Chris and I were offered a little bit of cocaine. And we looked at each other and we both looked and, you know, nicely said, you know, we appreciate that, but no thanks. And I thought, you know what? I've never turned down cocaine before. I've been away from it for so long that it's never been in my circle where I've ever had to turn it down. But it was funny that when it finally is available, we so quickly turn it down, you know, because everybody knows the story of Kevin Dubrow, you know?
Yeah.
Off the cocaine for years. One night, decides to party, dead. You know, I always think about the professional wrestler, Mr. Perfect. You know, partied hard when he was young, as a lot of us probably did. Gets to be a little bit older, decides, well, I mean, I used to do that all the time. I could try that again one night. Well, one night's going to party. What's the problem with that? Dead.
Yeah.
Don't do death drugs when you're so close to death anyway. When you're halfway there, it's time to give that shit up, I think.
Probably, yeah. So to turn the page on the next story, this is the other big news over the last, you know, week or so. Skid Row has yet again another new lead singer. this is like their fifth singer, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe more than that. I'm not sure.
And it's getting a lot of attention. I mean, I you know, they've already released a single with him. Have you checked this out yet?
I have. I dig it. I like it. Yep. I think the dude's a great fit for the band. I think it's going to kind of throw them back to a simpler time of style. Like, the song reminds me of something you might have heard off the first album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It's definitely more reminiscent of that album than Slave.
Yeah, it's got kind of that vibe to it where it's a little bit poppy, but it's still Skid Row, so it still rocks. But I was looking forward to Worldwide Rebellion Part 3, so what's the deal with that? Is that just going to be another one of those, you know, like a Mick Mars album? They just record it but never release it?
I have no idea. That whole story behind that record is so weird. And then, you know, it seemed like that ZP guy was the right guy for them for a long time, and then out of nowhere, he's gone, and now this guy's here. This Eric Grönwall, who was he was on Swedish Idol, the Swedish version of American Idol, and then was the singer for the band Heat for several albums.
That was a good band.
Yeah, and they're still a good band. They got a new guy singing for them, and they still sound good. But no, it's like all I can figure with ZP was maybe they got in the studio with the guy, and it just wasn't going to work.
Yeah. Could have been something where they had a different vision for, I mean, what, that guy came from Dragon Force?
Yeah.
See, those Dragon Force and Skid Row aren't really two bands you kind of put on that same level. You know, maybe it wasn't a good match when it came time to creating new music.
Yeah, well, I mean, Dragon Force I always considered more of a power metal band, so different world than Skid Row, although, you know, Skid Row's changed a lot over the years. But I tell you what, I listened to the United World Rebellion, the last one they did, and I would like to hear this new guy sing on those songs, because material wise I thought it fit in with the old stuff. So
you're talking about the ones they came out with Solinger before he passed away?
I guess it was Solinger who did those, right?
Yeah, so part one and part two were Solinger.
Yeah, I listened to the newest one was. I guess that was part two. And I listened to the music, and I'm like, yeah, this sounds like old school Skid Row, more Slave to the Grind era. But I don't know. I mean, we'll hear more from them later in the year. But I don't know. I'm happy for them, and it just still cracks me up that all these people jump in with, oh, get Bach back. I'm like,
yeah, yeah. I think we talked about that a little bit on the last Friday Night Live we did. And yeah, you know, it's nobody wants to hang out with Sebastian Bach, not Skid Row and most not anybody else. But I tell you this, Sebastian Bach puts out great albums on his own, you know, so you get kind of double the pleasure. I mean, this makes me happy because it means new music from Skid Row. And I think that's the coolest thing about it was, hey, new singer, bam, new song, big news, new album coming out later in the year. That's fantastic because as a Skid Row fan, I've been waiting a long, long time since the last album they came out with, which was all them years ago when Johnny Solinger was their singer and he was still alive. God rest his soul because I'm telling you that the Johnny Solinger era of Skid Row is highly underrated. That guy put out some great songs with that band. And then he's gone and they got the new guy and you're thinking, okay, cool. They're working on part three to this trilogy of EPs that's supposed to be like a full album. But it never happens, and you wait, and you wait, and you wait. And so the fact that they got new music coming out, I'm cool with the whole situation. Sebastian Bach, he can keep putting out albums on his own. If you like Skid Row, you like the classic stuff, you should be even happier because that way you can get both.
All right, so now on to, boy, here's where I'm going to have a rant. Not so much over the story I'm going to share, but more over why this whole situation is happening in the first place. So everybody knows I'm like the one of the two hosts here who is a bit of a Bon Jovi fan, or at least pre, you know, 10 years ago.
That's true.
Yeah. And I, you know, and really until about 10, 15 years ago, they were still able to kind of bring it live. And, but over the last few years, you know, John Bon Jovi's voice has really gone down the shitter. And, they just kicked off their newest tour, and well, the review I'm reading off of is from St. Paul, which I guess was the second night of the tour. I think Omaha was the first night. And even when you've got reviewers actually calling this out, then that's a problem. The headline is John Bon Jovi's pained vocals were living on a prayer at St. Paul concert.
Yeesh.
That's not good when that's the headline.
No.
And Part of the review says he's never been a particularly technical singer and his voice has lost some power over the past decade. But Bon Jovi didn't just miss a note here or there. He struggled throughout the 2-hour-plus show. Nothing from his past suggested such a sudden decline was coming. Well, actually, I would say I could tell that was coming. Then it says he wasn't just butchering the older stuff, which the band now plays in a lower key, but the fresh material as well. And weirdly enough, at times it sounded like he was trying and failing to emulate Axl Rose in his prime.
Wow.
Quite frankly, it felt like he had forgotten how to sing. Now let's take a listen to this is the first night of the tour in Omaha. So this is when your voice should be pretty damn strong, right? We're just going to listen to the beginning of You Give Love a Bad Name. And then I have a few thoughts on this. So here we go. That makes the point.
Wow.
That wow. That's brutal.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
That's worse than what Don Dokken sounds like today, I think, which is saying something.
That's pretty close. You know, you could have like a contest with Joe Elliott, John Bon Jovi, Paul Stanley, you know, all these guys that are getting up there in age are still pushing it, man.
Well, Well, you can't put Paul Stanley in that argument. I mean, he sounds the same every single night. Oh, wait, never mind. Well, there's a reason for that. But knowing that, now you get into the point where I got some people saying, well, at least he's doing it live and he's not miming like Paul Stanley is to a track. And I'm like, well, that's one argument. And then there's another argument of, God, I'd rather hear him lip sync than hear this. Well, how about neither of these options? You know, everybody loves to give Gene Simmons shit for saying the whole rock is dead thing. Do you know whose fault all this is with Bon Jovi being out here and Joe Elliott sounding bad? Do you know whose fault it is?
Kiss?
It's our fault.
Oh, it's our fault.
It's music fans everywhere's fault.
Well, you know, you got a damn good point there, because if you look at the video, the place is packed.
It's packed.
The people are going nuts. They don't care. It doesn't bother them in the least. They're singing along. And when the show's over, they're going to go out to the parking lot and be like, that was awesome. Bon Jovi rules. And it doesn't even look like it's half the original members.
No.
And Bon Jovi sounds like hell. But they're all going nuts.
This is what happens when the vast majority of music fans stop listening to new stuff and stop looking for new bands to get into.
Yeah.
This is the death knell of that generation. And I mean, I can't blame Bon Jovi and Kiss and Def Leppard for going out, because there's millions of dollars to be made. But like, if you think back to when we were teens and our parents were like, oh, wow, you know, Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons are playing, you know, the bingo hall down the street. You know, they'd see shows. A lot of the older acts would be playing small venues because we were the young people, the next generation. We were buying tickets to see up and coming bands that could still do it. And you don't have that anymore, because newer bands are getting ignored completely. And it's not just the music fans' fault. It's radio's fault. Yeah. There is no push for new material. And I'll tell you something. We're walking a tightrope here with the death of rock and roll. Because if you've got Bon Jovi, who can't even hold a note anymore, selling out arenas, what's going to happen in 10 years?
Yeah, when he physically can't do it anymore. I mean, at some point, is it become everything is Kiss 2.0? It's Bon Jovi 2.0. It's Def Leppard 2.0. Motley Crue 2.0. Is it holograms? Is it, do people care if it's holograms in the future? We don't care that it's holograms. We just want to have a Motley Crue experience.
Right. And that's all people want is nostalgia now. And it's like, but there's so many good bands that have that same spirit and style that are doing original material that you're ignoring. And then cover bands go, and I love me some cover bands, but there's cover bands and tribute bands that are going out and cleaning up, because that's all people want is fucking nostalgia. You know, and you got holographs and shit. Come on, man. I mean, I don't know, though. You know, it's just like, go out and make your millions, Bon Jovi. But like, if people want to point the finger at anybody, point it back at yourself.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with that, because it makes sense. Because like I said, the place is packed. People are nuts. They're singing. They're having a great time. There's most people in that audience are not going, this sucks. There's probably a couple out there that came to hear some music and go, God, you know, this guy just ain't got it no more. But it seems like to me, for the most part, everybody's singing along and having a great time and enjoying the Bon Jovi experience. So at that point, somewhere down the line, it doesn't have to be Bon Jovi. It can be, like you said, a hologram or something. And then where does that leave new bands?
It leaves them screwed. And like, and it's like, talent isn't even appreciated anymore. People don't give a fuck about talent anymore.
No, it's about what? The brand? It's about the name. It's about seeing him up on stage. You know, there he is. I seen him. I got a video of him and I took a picture of him with my phone.
Yeah, it's depressing.
It's like seeing an old retired football player or something. But this guy's still out on the field. What the hell is he doing out there?
I don't understand it. And and I run Rockin' Pod, but like, and I love that nostalgia brings people into that because they want to meet people they grew up listening to. That's fine to do meet and greets and stuff like that. See them on stage, do a panel, whatever. But if I don't know. Like, to me, like, there are so many artists that are still playing arenas that I grew up listening to, but, like, it's going to break my heart if I go see them live, and I'm not going to go see them live, you know?
That was our whole dilemma with going and seeing Kiss that time, that last time.
And I had fun hanging out with you and Buddy and some people, but the concert was the least interesting part of it, of that night for me.
But again, I kind of agree with that too, because I was more, I mean, yeah, it was fun because it's those songs, you know, and it's part of your life and you've heard them a million times, you know, and you love them. It's those songs, you know, so you're always going to be tapping your toe a little bit, but it was more about the effects and the show and everything at that point. So that's, if it was that way for me, then clearly it was that way for everybody. Hey, these are good songs, but wow, look at the lights, look at the lasers, look at the, you know, all the other stuff. This is a Kiss concert.
It was a lot of nice window dressing, but the thing I always remember kind of feeling a high walking out of a Kiss show, and I didn't feel that for that one.
No, definitely you not. Know?
And I, but then same year we both went to see Ace, and I did feel that way walking out of the Ace show.
Totally did.
So I'll take, you know, I'll take the warts and all approach, but when the warts and all are Bon Jovi at Omaha, but no, I just, sorry to rail about this, but it just irritates the shit out of me.
And you love Bon Jovi.
Well, like I said, pre-2005 maybe, but no, I just, it's so stupid. And like, and people are just brain dead. It's like they want to say that they went to see Bon Jovi in an arena. Who gives a fuck how he sounds? It's like, really? It's like music is so disposable these days.
Like you say, you know, Bon Jovi's not going to turn it down. Hey, they want to hear you sing. Really? They want to hear me sing? I can't sing. I gave that up years ago. No, they want it. Okay, how much you paying? This much. I'm there.
And the stadium tour, the two headliners are Motley Crue and Def Leppard, two bands that have singers that can't sing anymore.
And nobody cares because they're just going to go, hey, I went and seen Motley Crue and I took a picture and made a video on my phone.
Yeah, honestly, I think Poison's the best band on that bill as far as live show goes.
I suppose as far as, yeah, how they held up.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know what you're getting with Poison. Yeah. You know, it's not going to be a Dream Theater show for technique or anything, but it's going to be fun, you know.
Well, no, and Bret Michaels was never like I guess Bon Jovi sang in a higher register, and Vince Neil sang in a higher register, and Joe Elliott definitely, you know, I think Bret Michaels was the smart one, you know. Made just as much money and didn't kill his voice and still can get out there and sing because, you know, he's not hitting falsettos and shit.
Yeah. So I still have people going, oh, you're going to go see Motley Crue? Fuck no. No.
I'm going to see Poison.
Yeah, I'll go watch Joan Jett and Poison and leave.
I wish it could be a Poison headlining tour. I'd like to see Poison like I seen them back in the day where they were the main band and they could play a long time and pick and choose a lot of stuff that you don't hear in the quick opening Poison sets. You know, that's what I kind of miss, because those guys can still do it. When they're done with this thing, they should go headline themselves a tour. Find them a couple of good young bands, good rock bands that are young and hungry to take with them. Because if people will go, hey, we want to go see Poison, they might go, holy shit, we saw this new band, you know, whether it be like Dawn of the Rising or any of these other countless new bands that we're constantly telling you about, and, you know, get some young blood out there and get some people maybe to help them. You know, that can kind of fall back on some of these stars that are on the twilight. You know, they should be doing their part to help continue rock by bringing out young bands the way bands like Kiss and they, like Kiss did. You know, they take out the young acts and let them be witnessed by their audience, and next thing you know, they're a huge thing. You don't get that anymore either.
But it's more fun when they bring a painter out.
Ha ha, the painter.
Fucking ridiculous.
If it weren't for that painter, Buddy Baker would have never found us.
That's true. Yeah, it gave us a break.
We would have been wandering around outside.
I was like, all right, we've seen enough of this. Let's walk. Yeah, it's not fun to watch some guy do a painting from the third upper deck.
Yeah, you know, it was, he like did the scribbling thing and then he flipped it over and it's like, oh, it's a picture of Mick Jagger. I've seen enough.
Yeah.
Let's go for a walk.
This was just interesting to me. Vivian Campbell talking about how bleak his salary was in Dio, and you know how he saved up as much money as he could to buy a Ferrari back in the 80s. But I don't know if this is something if we ever have Vinny Appice back on the show, I'd like to ask him about this, because the picture that Vivian paints is kind of bad of Ronnie James Dio. Have you heard this story about, you know, the supposed deal they had set up when he joined the band?
No, huh?
So essentially what he said, he was on Dean Del Rey's Let There Be Talk, and I've heard this him talk about this in the past, and essentially what he claims is that when he joined the band, or when they started the band, Ronnie had told all the guys that basically this is going to be an equity deal down the line. So essentially work for free while we build work for basically pennies while we build the band up and get our following. And then by the third album, you'll have a piece of the band. But Vivian says that they basically earned less than the crew did, and they got none of the t-shirt money, none of the ticket sales, none of the record sales, but they were working towards this promise that by the third album, it would be an equity situation. And then when they started working on the third album, Vivian was kind of the squeaky wheel going, "Hey, Ronnie, do you have a minute?" And Ronnie kept pushing it off and pushing it off. And then they eventually fire Vivian.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if that's really true or not. If Ronnie was basically dicking them over on that, because it's only Vivian I've heard mention this. I've never seen Vinny or Jimmy Bain say anything about this, so I wonder what the truth is.
Those other guys were kind of established already. Vivian was like,
he was the new guy,
the young hot guitar player that Dio found. You know, he didn't have no name recognition. You know, it, when it comes to the t-shirts and stuff, you know, the name on the t-shirt, it's Dio. The name on the album, it's Dio. You know, this whole thing was built around Dio. So, I mean, you come in and you go, what do I do? You know, this deal stinks, but I get to be the guitar player for Dio. You know, and he probably had, you know, was able to get some small endorsements and stuff for himself. But, I mean, there's perks to it. But then you say, no, this isn't a good deal, I'm not going to do it. And you go, okay, what if I never get an opportunity like this before? I mean, it's Dio.
Right.
You know, I got to imagine it's going to be one of those hard things to juggle.
Well, and he drags Wendy into the whole thing, too, because he says, because ultimately Ronnie never told Wendy, and Wendy was his estranged wife, but his manager, and therefore by default the band's manager, but she never saw it as being a band. He never explained that aspect to her. She always saw Ronnie Dio kind of like Ozzy Osbourne.
Right.
It didn't matter who was behind him, and he said, but Ronnie should have known better. The magic of that original band, that's what I had a beef with Ronnie. He knew how good the band was, and for him to be so fearful of Wendy that he wouldn't even have the balls to tell her that, this is what I want, this is what I promised the guys, this is what we're going to do. She just kind of went, no, you're the star, you don't need them, get somebody else to play guitar.
Right, that probably, you know, goes into her cut, if you think about it as a business thing, and not saying, because obviously we weren't there, we don't know how it went down, but if it is like that, you know, it's like, oh, more money has to go out. That's less money in our pockets, you know. And I don't know. It's a sad thing if that's how it went. But I would imagine that probably happens all the time. You know, work for free because this thing's going to be huge. And when it does get huge, that's when you're going to cash in. Oh, you're here to cash in? You're out.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting thing. Vivian Campbell's somebody I would like to have on the show one of these days, because I think it would be an interesting interview to get his whole side of that thing. And I'd like to talk to him about his time with Whitesnake, too, because that's another interesting scenario, because he was also a hired gun with that band.
Right. Yeah. Luckily for him, he was able to take that, you know, and because then you get fired from Dio, that you're back in that same situation. Oh, shit. Now what? Well, here comes Whitesnake, no problem, you know. And then from that into Def Leppard. So the guys, you know, basically what Dio said was kind of true. You know, you're gonna start here. You ain't going to make no money, but you're going to have little perks. You know, you're going to get to go on tour. You're the guitar player from Dio. Your name's on the albums. You're in all the magazines. When he got fired, I mean, it probably sucked for the first couple of days until he got the call about Whitesnake. So, I mean, it kind of did, you know, that was the equity. You built your equity in your brand and your name and who you are and your abilities to get your reputation out there. So now we cut you loose and you're on your way. And he was.
Yeah, but I think he was viewing it as equity, as in a stake in the band. But I mean, honestly, did you know, and I love Dio, but like Dio never really went further popularity wise than he did through those first three records. So,
nope.
And then Vivian winds up on one of the biggest selling albums of the 80s. Well, not on the album, but you know, playing in the band to support that record, and then winds up with Def Leppard. And, you know, as much as I don't like Adrenalize on, very popular stuff. So, yeah. I mean, honestly, he probably made out better in the long run.
Yeah, totally did, because while his career takes off, Dio just kind of plateaus after that.
Yeah, and I mean, I love all that material, too, especially, you know, like Lock Up the Wolves and stuff like that.
Well, if you're going material versus material, I'd definitely go with the Dio.
Oh, yeah, but mass appeal-wise, I mean, Vivian wound up much bigger exposure-wise, and to this day, you know. So, here's another interesting one. You're a Chris Jericho fan, right?
I am. Love Chris Jericho.
Well, he's getting some heat now. Did a interview
That's
with
what he's good at.
Yeah. I'd use a wrestling term, not even realizing. I'm going to turn heel on Jericho for a second.
Take it easy.
So he goes on WRIF, and this goes kind of back to the Bon Jovi thing, and admits that they use pre-recorded backing tracks for Fozzy shows. And he says, we use those tracks for some songs, and everybody does, unless you're Guns N' Roses. Let me rephrase that. If you're in Slash's band, Guns N' Roses has backing tracks. They have a keyboard player. It's just the way of the world right now. It doesn't mean we're not singing and not playing. If you're listening to a record and you go to a Def Leppard gig, you hear Pour Some Sugar on Me. That was recorded with 25 tracks of guitars. You can't just go with two guitars on stage and in your right mind think that there wasn't something building up in the background there. It's just kind of the way bands are. And then he's like, you know, Queen used tracks in the 70s. If you don't believe me, watch it. And when they play Bohemian Rhapsody live. So, and the main person that's called Jericho out on this over the past year was Sebastian Bach. You know, he went on Twitter and kind of ranted against Jericho, saying, you know, putting links out. And if he's making the argument just on backing tracks with like backing vocals or an extra guitar track, that's one thing.
Right.
But there's evidence out there of full on lead singer vocal tracks that he's used.
Jericho?
Oh,
shit.
That's what Sebastian Bach pointed out too. And I don't like Sebastian. He's a prick, but I think he was right in this thing.
So
and
you're lip syncing the entire show?
I don't know if it's the entire show, but it's at least part of it. Cause there's video evidence of it where, you know, he's not even near the mic and you're hearing a vocal track going.
Wow.
So, and this is happening a lot more often these days. And this goes back to the argument about the Bon Jovi things. Like what musical society are we creating here?
I think that this kind of thing probably has gone on for a long time, but you just don't hear about it so much back then because it was such a shameful thing, you know, to nowadays. Like you said, you see Bon Jovi up on stage and some people would say, man, I wish he was lip syncing. This would be a lot better, you know? Yeah, exactly. You know, we had the whole dilemma of, you know, Paul Stanley talks shit about people that use backing tracks for years and then now has to rely on his vocal support and, you know, acts like it's okay. Well, but you used to talk shit about people like that. You know, it's kind of a little hypocritical, but
it's a lot hypocritical.
If you're coming out and saying, yes, we're using backing tracks and yes, it's because I can't sing like I used to, but people still want the Kiss experience. People still want the, you know, whatever band, Bon Jovi, whoever experience. It's more important to, you know, look cool and be up there and be available for the pictures and give the whole experience. Now you got a choice. Can't sing, you know, or can't carry the whole entire show. Or in some cases, maybe you're just sick that night or something. Would you rather have your favorite band cancel the show or come out and lip sync and not tell nobody?
Me? I'd rather them cancel the show. That's me. I don't.
I mean, you still get the guitars and everything. You know, your lead singer's not feeling good, so I'm just gonna lip sync tonight. How many times does that happen, do you think?
But I mean, if we're going to go this route and be and everybody's going to be okay with this shit, then let's give Milli Vanilli their fucking Grammys back. I mean, this is...
You know what?
I don't know.
That's a valid argument.
Well, but I mean, well, not really, though, because they didn't actually sing on the original tracks.
That's completely right. Different. So that people. Is different then, yeah.
That's different, but it was a cheap joke, and I wanted to get it in. But,
well, in that case, don't ever bring up Milli Vanilli on this show again.
Right. But no, I don't know. I mean, it's just like, why? How many more concessions are we gonna make so these bands that we loved it when we were 12 can go out and tour? It's like, enough already. Yeah. Let's get into newer bands and just, if you can't hack it on stage, get the fuck off the stage. That's the way I view it.
You know what? It's hard to argue that, because that was what made our rock legends so great. They were in the studio writing these great songs, but then when they came to your town, they could get up on stage, they could deliver the goods, you know, and that was something you could be proud of about your favorite bands. I saw that concert, they killed it, you know, and you knew back then. I mean, you think about it, though, like having Gary Corbett backstage behind the curtain, you know, triggering stuff, helping sing, that's got the keyboards back there. Isn't that sort of backing tracks way back?
To a point, and... Fuck you for playing devil's advocate.
I'm just saying, it's been going on for a long time.
It has. Well, only to an extent, like for like a guitar track or a backing vocal track. That's, you know, Ozzy did it. Robert Mason, that's how he got his start in the music industry. He was doing Ozzy's backup vocals back in the 90s. But no, I mean, it's like, if we're going to go full on with lead vocals on a track, I'm sorry, that's a step too far. Yeah. I can't do it. I can't support that.
I mean, should a band be forced to reveal a percentage? A percentage of tonight's show will be, you know, lip-synced, and that percentage is 89%, 54%, 22%, you know, whatever.
I think there should be. And like Gene Simmons even made that fucking argument like 3 years ago, before Paul started miming, saying it should say on the ticket. Yeah, I know, but it's like, you know, you're going to make that argument, and now you're just going right along with it. Oh, and listen to the scream at the end of Deuce. It's the same every night, so even Gene's fucking doing it, too. Seriously, but like this is going on for too much, but I think, yeah, there should be a disclaimer. But at the same time, the vast majority of people that go to these shows don't give a shit. They're brain-dead nostalgia lovers. That's it.
Yeah.
And to me, I don't like those people.
It's a tough thing, man. It's really, it's up to the individual, I guess, but you do make a huge point where it's not helping anything. It's only prolonging the inevitable, and when the inevitable happens, what's left? What have you built to take its place? Talk about Chris Jericho. It's a lot like wrestling. You got the stars, you got the Hulk Hogan's, the Undertaker's, Triple H's, guys like that. Chris Jericho's. Eventually, or if they haven't already, these guys all retire, you know, it gets to that point. So it's up to WWE or AEW or whichever to create new wrestlers to take the place of the guys that are retiring, because as awesome as Ric Flair is, as awesome as Hulk Hogan is, those guys can't do it forever. They have to retire eventually. And so if you have never spent any time creating new characters for people to care about, your wrestling is dead. Once the older generation is finished, you're done for. It's kind of the same idea with rock and roll. Once Def Leppard and Motley Crue and Kiss and Bon Jovi and all these bands we've talked about, once they're gone, once AC/DC's gone, once Metallica's gone, what's left? What have we built up to keep it alive, to keep it going? We need to start building again, building these bands up. There's plenty of good ones out there.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, there are some that are doing well and succeeding. So it's not that bleak, but it's just like the majority of society are just, they're just sheep. I'm sorry to say this, but it's like the whole argument with classic rock radio. You know, our friend Lonnie, who, you know, used to work at The Rock, we'd go up there and we'd make, you know, he did that show Metalworks and would play the deep tracks that we all loved. And we were like, God, why the fuck can't radio just be like this all the time? And he would always tell us, well, we do surveys and we check, and most people want to hear the same fucking 50 songs over and over again. And it's just like, as a person who loves music, I can't understand it. I can't wrap my head around it.
Or like when we were kids, if we went and seen a band and found out that they were lip syncing, we'd be pissed.
Oh, yeah.
Real pissed. Imagine going to a Motley Crue show in the 80s and finding out that Vince Neil lip synced, or that, you know, Mick Mars' guitar, he was just miming it or something like that. You'd be fucking irate.
Well, and it'd be a scandal in the news.
Yeah, big time. But it's funny because you watch that Bon Jovi thing and that's how it was. It started out and I was like, oh, man, he's not sounding so great. But then the fans, you know, it pans around the arena and it's filled all the way up. And I go, what the hell? And I go, wow, Bon Jovi's still popular. And he's still croaking. And the fans are singing along and they're chanting and they're cheering. And I'm just like, what the hell? You know, they shouldn't be cheering this.
Yeah, there's times I'm like, am I taking crazy pills or am I living in a weird matrix or something where only I can see how bad this is?
See, and I think that's the perfect point. Like you said, when we were kids, if that would have happened and people found out about it, there'd be outrage.
But yeah, everything gets a pass now. That's the fucked up thing. It's just so you can get your selfie or just do your Facebook check-in going, I'm at the Bon Jovi show. Well, fuck you. Sorry, I'm really getting pissed off thinking more about it. Let's talk about
it. It'd be interesting to talk to some Bon Jovi fans and see how they feel about it. But then in that same breath, you can talk to Dokken fans, you can talk to Kiss fans, you can talk to fans of many, many number of bands that are on the verge of retirement, forced retirement.
But that's all interesting that Tom Kiefer kind of finally touched on in an interview about Jeff Labar's death. Because I think it's the first time he's publicly addressed it. And Eddie Trunk had him on recently. And, you know, he just, you know, nothing earth shattering, but, you know, it was interesting to hear what he had to say. He said, I've got to tell you, you're never really ready for that kind of loss. You're not prepared to hear that kind of thing. And everyone's trying to grieve and process it. Jeff was a passionate, amazing person, musician, human. He had a huge heart and was a tough one, still is for everybody. And he says that they had a good relationship throughout their career. This is obviously there's times where you have differences. That's part of being in a band. It's true what people say. They're like a family, but honestly, it's like that and even more intense because there's so many facets that inform the dynamics between bands. He says they had a great relationship. He loved him and has great memories. Jeff had a great sense of humor. And he says he's in touch with Eric and Fred and everybody, and they're all still trying to process it. But this is a sad situation because, you know, Jeff went on Izzy Presley's show years ago and basically pointed the finger at himself because everybody's like, why is Cinderella not getting back together? And essentially, I guess that the last shows they did were on the Monsters of Rock cruise in like 2015, I think. And apparently he made a scene. He was so drunk, like passed out in front of people stuff. And he was saying in that interview with Izzy, he's like, I think it's all my fault. I have a drinking problem and that caused a rift. And he says, you know, and Tom was like, what the fuck? And he's like, I don't blame Tom for not talking to me. So I think Tom had kind of cut them off at one point. Hopefully they've, the three remaining guys have been able to kind of put it back together as far as just on the friendship. I don't care if Cinderella plays again, but hopefully they all get along now.
No, I was going to say it is kind of nice at least to hear that, you know, the other three guys still talk to each other.
Yeah. But like, I don't know, man, it's still not really been confirmed what it was that Jeff died from.
No, I had somebody was asking me about that. Like when it first happened, like what happened? And I'm like, I have no idea. I mean, I think they assume that because we're in Nashville, that's, you know, you get all the firsthand news about stuff like that, which Jeff was here in Nashville too, you know, and we'd run into him from time to time, but super nice guy. I have no idea what actually happened. I don't think it's ever really come out. Huge loss, whatever it was. Yeah, huge loss all the way around.
I remember one of the first things that Aaron and I ever did was go to John Karabi's Toys for Tots thing in East Nashville at a biker bar called Drifters. Yeah. I don't even think Drifters is there anymore.
I don't think so.
And Jeff sauntered in and Jeff was walking with a cane. I remember that. Like he had had hip surgery or something and had grown his beard out. And I think one of us was like, hey, Jeff, when's Cinderella getting back together? He's like, you're asking the wrong guy. But he was really nice, though.
Hanging out with him out front of the Zany's Comedy Club.
Yeah.
The Rockin' Pod. He was laughing, had us all laughing. Ian was out there cracking him up. It was fun.
Yeah. Yeah, he loved to talk to fans, and he was just a regular guy. Yeah. You know,
and from what I hear, yeah, it was great
talking to him. Yeah, I mean, he got into that. He wound up being he was a cook at Claim Jumper at Opry Mills, and then was doing like videos and stuff. But seemed like he'd kind of, you know, reinvented himself at that time. You know, it's just sad that he's gone. I tried getting him for Rockin' Pod every year. I never could, though. Yeah. You know, but yeah, going to be missed. But I'm glad to hear Tom address it, you know, finally publicly, because a lot of people are like, what's going on with their relationship? So I thought that was kind of worth talking about.
Yeah, that's definitely the stuff we love, you know. It's good to hear them guys talking again. Have you heard, I got one for you before, because I actually got a new story that I was wondering about, if you knew anything about it.
Sure.
The London Choir Boys, have you heard about that?
Yeah, I thought about putting that in here. I wasn't sure if you would know, if you heard about it or not.
Yeah, it's, so the lead singer is Spike. He's been the lead singer since day one. He's the most focal point of the band all these years, and the guys, the rest of the band are all newer, you know, like some of them have been around for a while, but they're not the original guys anymore. And they decided they were going to kick him out of the band, which is kind of funny. That'd be like Bon Jovi getting kicked out of Bon Jovi.
Or Vinnie Vincent getting kicked out of the Vinnie Vincent Invasion. Oh, yeah. Oh wait, that actually happened.
Yeah, it does happen sometimes. I guess only when it's justified. And in this case, from what I was reading about it, I mean, it kind of sounds like it's justified. I don't know how you kick out, you know, the main guy. You don't kick Mark Torrine out of the Bullet Boys, you know. He kind of is the Bullet Boys, and that's kind of, Spike is the Choir Boys. Good comparison. But, yeah, they did it. They kicked him out of his own band. And so he's come back and said, but it's my band, you know. I'll just start a new Choir Boys because I'm the guy. But they said he was doing a lot of shady stuff, like they'd have a tour lined up. And he'd book solo dates, and they'd go, wait a minute, you can't have a solo date. That's the same night we're playing in this town. And he'd be like,
right.
Oh, well.
Yeah, I read the back and forth, and like they're, you know, and then he's coming back and saying everything they're saying is bullshit. And I don't know, man. I mean, the Choir Boys, I like them. I loved them back in the day, but I don't know, man. I mean, this guy must be really hard to deal with if they're willing to fire him. And he's like the one identifiable member of the band. So, but I mean, there's no future in that for them. I mean, they've already had shows get canceled because the venues are like, wait a minute, you can't, we're not going to have you play without him.
So the guitar player's going to sing? I don't know about that.
Sounds like a show I tried to book for Rockin' Pod a couple of years ago, but that's a Patreon story. But anyway, yeah, the singer's not going to be there, but it'll be fine. Yeah. No, it won't. But yeah, I don't know. It's their appeal, as they said in Spinal Tap, was selective to start with. So
they're pretty big in England.
Yeah, but I'm like, they're not going to be doing any U.S. dates. But maybe, I don't know, maybe this was a big deal for the European dates. I don't know. I have to think Spike's going to make out way better in the long run than they
are. I would think so. I mean, I remember they did a tour in the States, and Rock and Ron went and seen him in Denver, and he loved them.
Yeah, but I heard they didn't draw squat when they played here. Yeah. I don't know. They're just one of those bands that I'd love to see them, but like that, there's definitely no market. I mean, like Ugly Kid Joe would play America and do better than the Choir Boys would.
That's funny. That's my next news story, as a matter of fact. Yeah, Ugly Kid Joe announces tour dates all over Europe.
Of course.
Why? I don't understand. For the longest time, I thought it was because Donald Trump was the president. But now he's not.
This goes back well before that.
He's not the president anymore. I know this has gone on for so long that you start to wonder things like that. Be like, oh, do they not play here because they hate President Trump? Okay, well, a lot of people hate that guy. Maybe that's what it is. But then he's gone, you know, and then we got a new president and everything. We're like, okay, cool. You know, if that's what it was, now they can come play the States. No, it must not have been that at all. I don't know what it is.
Somebody should do a parody story. Like, Ugly Kid Joe announces new Fuck America tour in Europe.
Turns out America is the least wanted.
Yeah, apparently so.
Lame. I hate it. I love it for the people of Europe. Congratulations to the fine folks over in Europe. But, you know, I mean, come on. It's the United States. We ain't got no wars going on here. Nothing. Come play in the States, Ugly Kid Joe, please.
Yeah, I don't, like I've mentioned before, there has to be a demand for it by this point. It's been so long. You know, I mean, I'm sorry, but if Choir Boys are doing U.S. dates, then surely Ugly Kid Joe can do some.
Yeah, Choir Boys are doing it. They don't even have a lead singer.
And they never actually had a real hit in America, so Ugly Kid Joe at least had two.
Yeah. I just don't understand it. I wish I could know what the real answer was. Then I could go about trying to change things and fix things. I would have a cause in my life. You'd see me out in the street with signs like, whatever the reason is, Ugly Kid Joe won't play the United States. I'd be out there rallying against whatever it is. But they won't even tell us. They won't even tell us. It'd be different if they would at least tell us, you know. Like, you guys, you loved us when we first came out. You loved everything about you. You loved the cover of Cats in the Cradles. And then you shit on us and just forgot about us. So you know what? Fuck you, America. We're not coming back. I could accept that. I'd be like, you know what? You're right. You know, most people did do that, but not me. I can't fly to France to see Ugly Kid Joe.
No, you could have gone to Virginia Beach last year. And
I couldn't even go to Virginia Beach to see him open for Judas Priest.
Did Mike end up going to that show?
Damn right he did, and that's why Metal Mike is Ugly Kid Joe fan number one.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll just have to look into what it would take to bring him to Rockin' Pod.
That would be awesome.
You'd lose your shit if I booked them.
They'd be like, is this Nashville, Pakistan? They'd be like, no, it's Nashville, Tennessee, USA. Oh, no, we can't do that.
Yeah, it's America, so fuck you.
We're booked in Ukraine that weekend.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Jeez, I don't get it.
I don't either. Well, you got any other stories?
That's the end of my sad news.
Okay. Well, we're well over an hour, so I think we're good with those. Other than the story about Michael Schenker saying that K.K. Downing ripped off his look in the 70s.
He totally caught my style.
Yeah. It's like, okay.
He had blonde hair. It was long. Wore leather. Yeah.
Played a flying V.
Just like me. I had a flying V, a white one, yeah. You know what?
Yeah, maybe he did.
Who knows? But that's why this is the most important news show you could ever possibly listen to. And we always have fun when we're doing new noise. We're going to try to do more of these. Maybe give you some extra new noise episodes in between other episodes of Decibel Geek Podcast. I don't know. We're just trying to think up new ways to give you guys more because you guys have given us so much over the years. We want to give it back. So I guess that's going to wrap up new noise for this week. And thank you guys once again for joining us right here on the Decibel Geek Podcast, and we'll see you next week.
See ya. Yeah.
Maryland sports fans, there's only one sports book in the great state of Maryland with over 50 years experience booking bets and supporting customers. Betfred Sportsbook at Long Shots is now open and is the only sports book in Frederick offering cash betting on football, basketball, world soccer, and more. Visit the Betfred Sportsbook at I-270 and MD-85 in Frederick, right next to Long Shots off-track betting. Go to BetfredSports.com for more information and your chance to win exclusive merchandise. Must be 21 or older. Play responsibly. For help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.